Welcome to the Modern Anabaptist, a podcast where we discuss contemporary topics in an Anabaptist light. Join us in our second episode in our summer series, COVID Reflections, where we will discuss the intersection between faith and life within a pandemic. And welcome to our second summer episode for the summer.
For the summer of 2021.
Mm-hmm.
It's crazy that we're in 2021. This last year has been interesting, hasn't it?
It's flown by, but then every day feels, you know, long.
Yep, that's exactly it.
And time is funky like that. Like, yeah. You know?
Yeah, it is. It is. Well, anyways, we are here and we decided to start the summer. At least we're going to do a bit of a retrospective on the pandemic and some of the things that maybe we've learned, some of the things that have been uncovered or revealed or apocalypsed to us. And so if you have missed our last episode, we just talked very quickly about this idea that apocalypse in the Bible literally just means a revelation or an uncovering or seeing something new. And so by any stretch of the imagination, I think COVID has been an apocalypse, in the sense that a lot of things have been revealed or have become clear. Not all of it good, not all of it what we thought it should be revealed, but there it is. And so in this first episode, we want to talk about what we have learned, what's been revealed about faith, about the church, about God.
Yeah. How has your faith been shaped over this course of pandemic?
Yeah, so let's start personally. Yeah, how has faith been shaped? I really don't know. And so that's the interesting part. I really haven't necessarily reflected very much about how my faith has been shaped. Although I would say that, well, I can't say that, you know, maybe somebody would say, you know, during this pandemic, I've grown closer to God, or I've taken more time for personal devotions, or I've really came back to my faith. That hasn't necessarily happened, but I think I've just more solidified my faith in a sense of what I believe in and what I know, what I think I know God wants for the church and what the purpose is for the church in this world. And so some of that, I think, has come kind of through the fire of being confronted with Christians who believe the very opposite of what I believe in this. And so perhaps that's how my personal faith has grown. How about you?
Yeah, I mean, this pandemic has given me lots of opportunities to push myself and grow in my faith. Like, I gave my first sermon and I wrestled through the Old Testament in school. So I really, like, engaged the Bible itself in new and meaningful ways. But it doesn't feel like I would have not been able to do that without the pandemic, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, there's this definite pressure that I felt right at the beginning where you have all this free time and now it's like, well, why not wake up for devotions early, or why not do daily devotions?
So yeah, that's interesting. You say pressure at the beginning, then that pressure went away?
That pressure went away when I stopped putting it on myself.
Okay.
I think that pressure comes a lot from what you expect other people to expect of you.
Yeah.
And so especially when you're in a Christian community where godliness is seen through certain actions and maybe not necessarily the actions that bring you closer to God.
Yeah.
Not saying that devotions are inherently a bad practice. I think we should all have moments of time set aside.
Yeah.
But to take out a devotional book, read a passage, and then say, okay, I've done my spiritual teeth brushing for the day.
Yeah.
There's a lot of pressure there.
Yeah. And it's not always good pressure.
And I think if I committed myself to that, I would have actually pushed myself away from actually engaging the text in any meaningful way.
Yeah. Some of what I'm hearing there too is that it would have entered you into a routine, which would have actually maybe inhibited you from going deeper than you would when you didn't feel that this was my routine and I've checked off my checklist of what I have to do for God and now I move on.
Yeah, well, I remember during the pandemic, it was more in relation to therapy itself. Before I I engaged in therapy with a client, I would have a 10-minute time of just listening to a devotional app. And that was more to help me get into the mind space and more in communion with God in the moment. But it wasn't necessarily a devotion, if that makes sense.
Yeah, it makes sense. So as we're talking a little bit about what we've learned about God and about faith and about the church, I thought, why don't I give you a sketch of some of the things I've seen, and then I have a question. I have a question for you. So I think there's been two real big reactions in a community of faith to COVID. So one reaction has been this idea of God is here to bring healing into this world. I mean, that's what he calls us to do. He's created everything. Creation is in some way running amok, and God is renewing everything. And so we have to be part of that. We have to protect the most vulnerable. We have to demonstrate to society that we care and that we cherish life, and we have to be leaders in the society. Even if that sometimes means that it's a sacrifice for us and how we imagine church should look like and church should act and all those kind of things. I think in some areas of church, actually, we've really thought about what church actually is about. And is it about meeting in a building, or is it about other things? And so that's been one of the questions that a lot of churches and a lot of Christians have asked. The other way, and both of these are engagement with faith, I think, and that's perhaps the overarching idea, is that we've all engaged with faith in one way or another. But the other direction has been to fully believe that this is an attack on Christianity, that it's an attack on our freedom, on our rights to express our religious preference in this world, combined with this idea that this is all a big conspiracy to somehow, I don't know, destroy Christianity, destroy the world as we know it, that we're all kind of falling prey to some sort of underlying satanic, demonic attack. That gets now coupled with all sorts of different things like the vaccines. So it gets all these conspiracy theories gets mixed into that as well. But it's a reaction to a crisis. And so on one hand, the reaction for some has been to, hey, this is the moment for the church to shine. And for others, they've said, hey, this is a moment for the church to fight back and to not believe. Would you ever have thought that it would go this way?
Oh, that question went in a different way than I was expecting. You know, if the pandemic didn't happen, so to speak, and we kind of looked at culture throughout the past year just in isolation, so trying to control that, it's a bit of a mental exercise.
Yeah.
But I think we could have seen that. We've seen lots of polarization in our groups and our community. Either you're on one side or you're on the other. And so this one side felt attacked and under pressure.
Yeah.
And while I think they're a minority amongst the larger group of people, I definitely think they're the vocal majority, or they vocalize themselves a lot more.
Their voices are louder.
Their voices are louder. And we just didn't have that healing message as loud as the fighting message.
Right. Right. I mean, as you're pointing it out, there's so many things I want to say. But one thing you're pointing out there is the one thing that I've been thinking about a lot. Is because the very nature of the healing message, which I believe fully is the right message. I mean, you can't look at Jesus. You can't look at Jesus in the Gospels. You can't look at Jesus in Paul. You can't look at Jesus in the Gospel, in the book of Revelation, and somehow claim that we are called to fight and to resist in this way that we have, and that we have to believe every conspiracy theory, and that, you know, that we have a right. I mean, it's just antithetical in many ways to what I consider the gospel. But this is the thing, because I believe in Jesus Christ and I want to follow the way of Jesus Christ, we've also thought that we're not allowed to be as loud and as polarizing in our opinions as the other side, because then we are just like the other side.
Yeah.
Which has enabled much more space for that loud voice, contrarian, fight this. This is a big conspiracy. We have a right.
Right. What I find interesting about the other side is that pandemics as a whole, history shows us, comes with an increase in religiosity.
Yeah.
Like a lot of the early saints or the saints in the Catholic period would have been seen with that healing message, and less so with that fight against public health.
Right.
If anything, public health infused religion into its messaging in order to kind of calm both sides and get everybody together.
Right.
Like the 40 days of isolation for the ships when they would come in is a holy number. And that's where quarantine comes from.
But we haven't gone that way this time around.
We haven't gone that way. If anything, we've kind of been scared to engage these religious communities in in scientific or in just public health ways.
Yeah, and so I've just been wondering whether, so the good part about it all, and I need to say this, I need to believe this, is that engagement with our faith is important, whether we agree with it and whether I like how some of that engagement has gone, but engagement with our faith is important. We need to question. But also, what has been uncovered for me is that we are now paying dearly for decades of bad discipleship and bad Bible teaching.
Yes, like I would agree with that. We are right now paying for the moments where people are using the message in their own way.
Yeah.
Not necessarily the way that the Bible is intended to, or in ways that bring healing to the community, but rather in ways that fight for individualized rights.
Yeah, and I really wonder whether our decades of privilege as the white North American church, I want to be very specific about that, as the white North American church, maybe the evangelical North American church. Yeah, I know we're not mainstream evangelicals as Mennonites the way it's seen in the US, but we're still evangelical in the sense that but the white church in general has had these decades of privilege, which has kind of really watered down our teaching and our preaching to kind of supplement our good life, right? I mean, we've treated the church as part of our good life, and we've slowly come to see the church as a certain right that we have, just like I have a right to have other things, and then just like I have a right to have good care at a hospital, or, you know, I pay taxes and then I have a right to certain benefits that come with paying taxes, and we have the judiciary to protect us. And so we've seen church as this part of this larger consumerist modern liberal project that kind of feeds into our sense of well-being. And when it didn't feed into our sense of well-being, we would go somewhere else where it did feed our sense of well-being better.
Mm-hmm. And just as you're talking about this commercialized church, I almost wonder if on one side, or if this has allowed us to supplement faith for church.
Say that differently so I understand it. Because I think it's a big point.
Yeah, so instead of engaging with our own personal faith, we go to church, and by doing so, that act is our faith.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And so by taking away our ability to go to church, it's like our faith is all of a sudden under attack.
I mean, that's, I think, from an outside perspective, as much as we can, we're not outsiders because we have a definite stake in this faith, but from an outside perspective, isn't that what was laid bare here? That for some reason, the argument is you're attacking my faith when I can't meet in a church building,
mm-hmm.
when I can't meet with more than 10 people. You're somehow restricting my ability to worship, which means that your faith and your worship was only that meeting with a group of people in a building. It was nothing else, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Isn't that what you're saying?
Yeah.
And so maybe that's what's been laid bare, right? Is that we just have this completely backwards concept of what church is.
And I very much think we do, because when this pandemic started, I was hoping as a youth leader that would allow parents to engage their kids with their faith more, than they could then step up and, you know, really build their family unit as a...
Yeah, right. That is funny that you're saying that. I've been just thinking about that the last couple of days. I've been trying to formulate maybe a Facebook post or something like that. I mean, there's been a couple of studies done about youth, about millennials specifically. So these are a bit older studies. But what shaped the faith of people? And consistently, it's been said, and we always think church is the most important thing for my kids. I need to get my kids to church. I mean, this is the argument I even got speaking with some parents in the parking lot here, saying, you know, I've switched to a different church than the one I used to go to because my kids can't just do church online. They need to be in church. And this church was having in church, while my church was not having in church, so I switched churches. But consistently, research is saying that the number one influence on your faith is parents.
Mm-hmm. Well, who are the kids spending the most time with? Parents.
Yeah. And who do they look up to most?
Parents. Like, as a youth leader, I'm there to have fun with the kids and show them that church is a good place. I'm an institutionalized instrument. I am not the disciple for your kids.
And so to me, this conversation goes too into schooling and you know, how there's a benefit kids being at home and learning from their parents. That's just the caveat in healthy families.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a room here and a place here for the church to to be a safe place for kids who are not in healthy family environment.
Oh, for sure. And I would even add in, like, with Judaism and temple life, the kids would congregate there to learn the Torah, right?
Right, right.
But there is still right. the Sabbath. There is that day of family coming together.
Yeah, but the way we've kind of commercialized our churches and consumerized our churches, we turned our churches into places of consumption. Or to have to feed our consumption is also we've turned our churches into places that should take over some of the work that we as parents had to do for the discipling, right? Yeah, I let the church do the discipling so I don't have to. The truth is that our kids are learning from us that faith is nothing else but church.
Yeah.
They're not actually receiving better faith or being discipled better by church. And so that's, I think, been laid bare by COVID and by our reaction as a church to this pandemic. In many ways.
And I think even the kids, when they start reading the Bible more, then they go through, because we talked about the deconstruction of faith. That's a big moment when they learn from their parents, when they're discipled in such a different way or than what the Bible teaches, you know?
Yeah, or even if they learn from the parents that there's room for doubt, there's room for learning, there's room for growth, that not everything is black and white, right?
Yeah, and I would say that would probably lead to a healthier deconstruction where you could reassemble it at the end.
Yeah, and so the problem is we're not doing that. And so I think you are very right. COVID has shown us that we substituted church for faith. Now, church as a gathering in a specific building or in a specific place at a specific time to do certain specific things. Now, I'm not against any of that. We need community and all those kind of things. Mm-hmm. But we said that's faith. And when we don't have that, our faith is under attack.
What else is interesting is when we were doing the live streaming, we were getting higher views on our live stream than we ever got in person.
You know, there's been an increasing struggle for me since the beginning, is because live streaming does feed into some of that consumerist mindset too, doesn't it?
It does, but I also, like, it's a tool for reaching people.
Right.
Right? So it's not, there is that component of individualization where you can sit at home and consume church on your own time in your own way. And
right.
I do that. I'm not going to lie. I wake up afternoon on Sunday and then I consume church later on in the day. Right. But it's also there reaching more people.
Yeah. And I think so where I got to the point, and there was lots of arguments about this right at the beginning of COVID, and I had no time for them. I was so done with all the quote unquote experts using their platforms now to tell us about the end of the church as we know it, or the end or the beginning of this, and whether you should be doing live stream or whether you should be doing pre-recording or whether you should be doing Zoom. And everybody had a stake in this, and it was just a way to get your voice in because everybody's going to listen to me right now. And I was so done with it all. But I think my hope was always that live stream wouldn't actually supplant church as much as it would encourage people to do church and to be church in their own places.
Yeah. And that's very much the hope, is when we can come back to church and we can be together. It then, the live stream or these other tools that we've learned along the way become ways we can reach people who maybe can't come to our physical building.
That's right.
Or we can use them as teaching tools when we go abroad.
I'm worried about coming back together because we are so polarized even within our own congregations. My congregation is not unique in that, and all other congregations are the same. Some pastors are losing their jobs because of some of that polarization, especially in our area right now. So in some ways, while it seems like we've learned this, we've also haven't really learned it because we haven't come to a common place of understanding about what COVID has done to our churches.
Mm-hmm.
We're still seeing this from very different perspectives. And so some of that disunity, I think, will remain with us for a while.
Oh, for sure. And you know what? I suspect that disunity has always been there.
Yeah.
Crisis tend to not create problems as they do expose them.
Yeah, They reveal them, right?
They reveal to us our weaknesses.
Yeah, yeah. So one weakness that I think it's also revealed, outside of this idea that church was our faith, for a lot of us, that's what we've learned, is that you can't have faith without church building, and that's your main expression of faith. Outside of that, I also think one thing that it's uncovered is that we have no idea how to express truth in ways that are truthful and powerful and yet aren't polarizing.
So you're saying we need to learn how to make messages that are unifying?
Yes and no. This this has been very interesting to me. It's because at least within the church environment that we are part of, it is very much okay to call out certain things. Maybe not my specific church where you and I go to, but in the larger kind of this Mennonite Anabaptist environment, it's very much okay to call out certain things because they're harmful and hurt, right? So we call out racism because it's harmful and hurtful and it's sin. We call out sexual abuse because it's harmful, it's hurtful, and it's sin.
Right.
And we do this vociferously, as loud as we can sometimes, and we will make sure that whoever disagrees with us doesn't necessarily get the right platform to disagree with us.
Right.
But in this pandemic, we haven't done that. I think around vaccinations, we haven't done that. We haven't found the common voice that says this is right and this is wrong. Even though there will be people within our area that will disagree and they will feel persecuted by it, we haven't found a way to say these things in a way that is still loving, even if it's not always perceived as loving, but in a way that it's still loving, but that it makes sure that the right thing is louder than the things that aren't right. We're still kind of giving even space to both even with vaccinations, we're giving even space to both the vaccination voice and the anti-vaxxer voice.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't want to tell people they should take a vaccine because we think that will push people away. So it's strategy, but at the same time, it means that none of us are really giving good advice to each other.
Yeah, it's almost like we're tolerating it and that's causing more harm.
Yeah. But it's funny, we're not saying, hey, racism is a matter of conscience. We're not saying, hey, sexual abuse is a matter of conscience. We're not saying equality between men and women is a matter of conscience. We're saying, hey, there's a clear right way or good way or healthy way here and a very clear non-healthy, hurtful, sinful way here. But we have not really done that in this area.
Right. And didn't we encounter that with the masks as well early on? We were so worried about telling people, hey, you should wear a mask. Well, yes, we as Mennonites are not very, we haven't been very loud against anti-vaccines. But I would say in the Christian movement as a whole, or at least amongst evangelicals, there still is that movement where all comes under attack. So it's not a universal.
Sure. So I'm not talking about the whole Christian church. I'm talking within our own. We all have our own affinities and families of faith. So I've observed this in my family of faith that we have very clear ideas of what's good and what's wrong and a lot of things. But for some reason, on the issue of COVID, we were really worried about polarization. Or we weren't worried about that for other issues. And I wonder why.
Yeah, I don't know. I am very pro-vaccine, so I'm probably one of the voices that would, you know, confront people on this. But you're right, there is that sense where we're not calling it a sin, quote-unquote, or we're not.
No, and I'm not even saying that necessarily we need to call it a sin, but I'm just wondering why we can't fairly clearly state that vaccinations are a matter of public health. They are a matter of public well-being, and as Christians and as Anabaptists, as followers of Jesus who want to go in the way of Jesus, we want to support public health because the health of this world is God's business, it's Jesus' business, and death is antithetical to the whole movement of creation that God has, right? So, but we can't even state it like that. We kind of have to say, well, it's a matter of conscience, and we all have to work it out our own way, and that's fascinating to me. I'm not trying to criticize, but like I've looked at this in my own how I'm writing this on Facebook and how I'm engaging people on social media with this,
where it's a personal choice. I'm trying to think of what other aspects of our morality have we left have we left up to personal choice now? And
so very much I would agree that in other areas of the church, so for example, in the more conservative evangelical tradition in North America, matters like critical race theory and all those kind of things are framed. Racism and even sexual abuse is framed in its own way and kind of also framed as this matter of, hey, maybe your conscience is telling you wrong on this, and you know,
yeah,
you're moving away from Jesus if you follow critical race theory. Maybe that could be a completely different podcast. And in those churches too, there would probably be a right way mostly to think about COVID and a wrong way to think about COVID, at least in public pressure, and from the leaders, and because it's very politicized faith as well. But in our families of faith, this hasn't usually been, at least not from our leaders and not from most of us pastors. And yet, when I post a bit too strongly on Facebook about this, I feel the need later on personally to retract it because I want to be a good guy and I want to encourage people. Oh, I don't want to tear down people.
So you're feeling social pressure from speaking up about this.
But I don't even know if it's social pressure as much as you're trying to figure out how would Jesus do this?
How would Jesus implement public policy and bring it across to people?
Yeah, or talk to his disciples about this, right? So I made a Facebook post. I made a Facebook post about vaccines. I want to encourage the people that I know from my congregation that are getting vaccines, because our congregation is very divided on this. And I know people will be getting questioned not only on their conscience, but also on their mm-hmm. faith. And they'll be told that this is not a Christian thing to do, to get a vaccine, which I think is just horrid and wrong. And I made a dismissive comment in that post about people sowing disinformation. And one of the conversations that I had with somebody who agreed with me on this from my family was that, yeah, it was too dismissive the way you put it. And I said, but the other side is always says things in a dismissive way and looks down upon others. And the answer was, yeah, that's the whole point. We are not like that.
That's interesting, because as you're saying that, I was thinking about what did Paul in his letters say to some of the churches that use the Bible in their own way?
Well, exactly.
How they, when they, and he was quite strong. He said, let God's curse be upon you.
Yeah. But Paul also wasn't universally loved, right?
Yeah. And that's fair. So do we need to be loved to be right?
No, right. But this is the balance, because we do have a message we want to bring across. I mean, this is the question of every pastor faces all the time, even as you preach. How much do you say and how much do you not say?
Right.
Because you do want people to not shut down. And we know, I think we know from a psychology standpoint, that if somebody tells you you're wrong, you most likely are not going to say, oh yeah, you are right, I was so wrong. We are most likely going to say, who are you to tell me that I'm wrong?
Who are you? And then I am right. I have always been right. I will continue to be right. They become entrenched.
Well, exactly.
We've talked about that on an earlier podcast as well. But then there also needs to be a certain level of challenge or authenticity to your message. Like you can't water it down to the point where everything is acceptable or valid, right? You can't just have comforting messages. You have to.
Right, right.
You have to challenge and disciple.
Which then comes back to the fact that most of us don't actually want to be discipled in church. We just want to receive what we want from church and then move on, right? I mean, it kind of comes full circle here again. But I do think COVID has laid bare that we don't know, as leaders, we don't really know how to communicate about some of these issues, and we're still struggling with it.
That's a very interesting perspective. I that's not something I would have seen, because I was never in a leadership position in the church during this time, and that would have been a very challenging, and probably still is very challenging.
A third thing that I've noticed is that paradoxically, COVID has also enabled us to become greater consumers of church. I've noticed that there's, I mean, we're in an area here where I live, where the church is, where I work in, is you can't kick a soccer ball without hitting a church. I mean, there's a church on every corner, and we have great discrepancies between churches. And I think what COVID could have done is it could have increased solidarity between churches, increased collaboration between churches, and it could have moved us away from a model of where every church competes with the other for the same number of attendees. Instead, I think what COVID has done, at least where how I see it here in Winnipeg, is has increased competition between churches. The half churches had enough resources to really put together a great show for their audience. The have-not churches really struggled to go online. And where the dust settles after all is said and done will be interesting. But it hasn't changed our model of consumerism at all. A lot of the churches that are half churches have actually bought more into the model of consumerism, more into this model of church as just really excellent programming.
Well, do you remember that when we started live streaming and we were all worried about the production value?
Yeah.
And what we looked like on screen and
right.
We bought right. a good we were lucky and fortunate enough to buy a good camera, but you're right, we never extended our hand to other churches in our neighborhood and said, "Hey, do you need help?" or "Hey."
Right. Right. And so I would call us probably a middle-class church here in this area. And then we have the upper class churches who really just, you know, become wealthier in some ways throughout this in terms of their church programming, not money wise, but like in terms of their church programming. And so nothing has really changed in that area. We have actually, most of us really had to struggle with this idea of, do we worry about the production or do we try to remain authentic as much as possible and go from there? And so, yeah, I don't know. COVID for me has at least shown me that, personally has shown me that there's this very much this temptation of wanting, even if we say, hey, we're just doing it to connect to our church family. I'm so sick and tired of pastors on this is all over the United States and Canada, of pastors on Twitter and Facebook saying, you know, if you have your own church, please worship with them. But if you're looking around, consider checking us out on YouTube, right? Is there anything more blatant than saying, hey, you know, we're going to focus on trying to get other Christians to our church rather than trying to make new Christians?
Yeah, it's just about like, hey, also come to our church too because you're also a Christian.
Yeah, you could check us out and maybe we are better than the other church and we'd love to have you.
Yeah, so it's more about, it's a numbers game at that point.
And it was before COVID, and it's just increased our desire to do that, I think.
And if anything, it's... So we're talking about basically stratification of the churches, of just...
Yeah.
The rich-poor gap of church programming has really created huge... There's a huge divide there.
There's a huge divide. Huge. And some of us are... Some of us are fortunate, like you say, of having a donation to buy a good camera and at least managing to somewhat put together a normal live stream, right? And then other churches, you know, struggled for months to get that going. Even just trying to wade through the copyright issues was huge, right? It's a huge disparity, and we haven't started treating each other as common workers in the field. We've kept treating each other as competing stores for the same customers.
Yeah. I remember years and years ago when we did when there was like these youth events that would span church groups.
Right.
And those were some of my favorites as a youth, where it would be general conference and we all got together and kind of worshiped together.
Right.
And that we don't get that at the community level anymore. We don't have churches across where we are saying, hey, let's get all of our people together and let's...
Right, right. And I know that was all there before COVID. I'm not saying that it wasn't. I know there was. But it seems like COVID has incentivized us to do it even more and to be more upfront about it.
I was going to say COVID has given us an opportunity to challenge that, and we haven't even stepped up to that yet.
Right. We ran in the other direction.
We ran in the other direction.
I'm not criticizing anybody. I mean, I do this every Sunday. I check how many views I have on YouTube. It's super addicting to want to be in the spotlight, right? Just like it is super addicting to count numbers every Sunday. And wonder, what could I do to have higher numbers here? It's just, COVID could have really helped us to move to a whole new vision of the church. And we've all struggled with it. We really have.
Yeah.
That was my third thing. They're all connected, by the way. But, yeah.
Oh, yeah. No, that's good. Before we end off, did you want to say anything about apocalyptic? Because I know you read about it, or you said you did some readings right at the beginning about apocalyptic literature and COVID.
Yeah, it's just in the sense that I think we tend to identify apocalyptic as end times. Full disclosure, I think we've been in the end times for 2,000 years. So sure, COVID is the end times, just like so many other things are the end times. The reality, though, is that sometimes when what we tend to do is we tend to dismiss things. When we say they're the end times, we tend to spiritualize them and dismiss them and just kind of think we have to bear it and get through it, or we have to fight because it's the end times. And, you know, God is the warrior God who fights. But if we see apocalyptic more so as a revelation of what God is doing in this world and kind of opening up of things that are previously unseen.
And if anything, the society that was prior to this pandemic is dead now.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's maybe coming back. Maybe we revived its heart. But
maybe or maybe not. And it wouldn't be a bad thing if the world is a bit different. And so in that sense, it very much is apocalyptic, and there is an end and there is a new beginning. And there is an uncovering of a lot of things. And so we will talk some more about that, you know, some more endings and beginnings. We'll talk about relationships. We'll talk about mental health. I think there's all sorts of new conversations that are out there and new challenges that we'll approach. So, yeah, it's been an apocalyptic time. And we can say that, you know, it very much has had an end times feeling. In the way that World War II had an end times feeling and World War I had an end times feeling. And there's been moments in this world that sure have felt like they were an end, you know?
Yeah. But what happened in World War II when the Anabaptists, you know, we all came together is what I was trying to say. You know, we all grew together and that.
Right.
And like you said, we never really did that this time around.
No. We have not yet, no. And we'll reckon with that. I think there will be a reckoning with that. My hope is that there will be some renewed focus on really healthy Bible teaching and Bible study. Really healthy ways of approaching doubt and faith and kind of a move away from some of these simple answers.
And I think you hit the nail on the head there. With as even the purpose of this podcast is to help us not have those simple answers, where we can try and grow and build upon each other's knowledge and build a community where we can do so as well. So let's leave it there for this week, and we'll see you all in 2 weeks. Thank you for joining us on this episode of The Modern Anabaptist. This episode was recorded on May 3rd, 2021, and originally released May 19th, 2021. If you have any comments or questions or anything you'd like to share with us, please write to us at conversationsthatshapeus@gmail.com or follow us on Twitter at Modern Anabaptist. Join us next week for our conversation on mental health and its intersection with COVID-19.